Chapter 15, Section 4.1, Common Failures of Sensible Executives. With that in mind, I buried several common failures of sensible executives within the Phoenix scenario in the previous chapter. It's worth going through those now. Do remember that people aren't daft. Executives don't make these mistakes because of a lack of wit. The problem is blindness. If you cannot see the board whether visually or through some mental model, then you cannot learn patterns and you are moving in the dark, stumbling from one step to another as though it's the first step you or anyone else has ever taken down that well-trodden path. It may be well signposted with Doom, Doom, Airbnb Doom, and 100 other companies may have walked along that path and met Doom, but without a map, you're going to feel it's an undiscovered path to future success. This is especially true if you're unfortunate enough to attend that one conference with a CEO talking about how they built a successful company by traveling down that path and it wasn't blind luck. 1. Person's survivorship bias can be a killer to others. We often bemoan CEOs over their pay or lack of performance, and whilst in some cases it is justified, many are caught in a world not of their making, trying to navigate without any understanding of the landscape whilst bombarded by inertia and magic solutions. This is also why leadership requires fortitude. Being in a position of having to make the hard choices and the physical and mental exhaustion of playing the games is one of the reasons why I don't seek leadership positions. I've often found myself in that position out of necessity, but why anyone would seek to be in that position is beyond me. Anyway, assuming you're unlucky enough to find yourself in the role, then, a few common mistakes. Expand into an overseas market. When our existing market is undergoing a shift from product to more commodity or utility, then there is often the temptation to avoid the problem by selling into a less developed market. This can buy some time, but at the cost of increasing inertia to the change that's needed. You're actively avoiding the problem, and the competitor will not only chow down on your existing market but the one you're busy helping to create for them. We need to innovate more. The problem with trying to innovate your way out of a war, i.e. substitution from product to utility, is that the creation of the novel and new is highly uncertain by nature. It's a gamble. However, this is not what most people actually mean when they talk of innovation. What they're really saying is we need to innovate around our product, i.e. we need to differentiate. Well, in this case it's far too easy for the competitor to play a tower and moat game by copying any successful innovation you create for a product. To explain tower and moat, let us switch roles for a moment and become the company that has launched a utility service into a market that is surrounded by products. You occupy the future position and know full well that your competitors will have inertia to the change. They will often react by not only spreading fear, uncertainty and doubt, but by trying to differentiate their product offerings with some form of innovation. What you do is copy and add these to your utility service. Your focus is to build up a tower of revenue, your utility service, surrounded by a huge moat devoid of any differential value. The competitor's efforts to innovate in a product world end up just enhancing this by helping you to copy and grow the moat. When the competitors finally wake up and make the plunge into our future market, then they're likely to have been delayed because of efforts to differentiate their products with newfangled things, not a good move in a punctuated equilibrium, i.e. rapidly changing market, and they will actually have nothing different to offer. This is pretty much a disaster. So, now let us switch back to our role as product player. If our response to a utility provider entering into our market is innovate, then as long as it's truly radical and entering a different market and assuming we're aware that this is a huge gamble, then it's a reasonable move. If it's innovation around a product, then I hope you can see by now what's going to happen. Bad move. Doom, Doom, Airbnb Doom. Beyond the whole tower and moat play, then attempts to differentiate a product in a game of utility substitution brings two other dangers. First, there is the existing consumer's inertia to change, which is often represented by a desire to maintain the existing model rather than to adapt. They will encourage you in this differentiation play, and it becomes very easy to be seduced by it. The problem is that as their competitors adapt, the pressure on them mounts to adapt, the Red Queen. And though they tell you they want the past, they often end up buying the future. There's no point in complaining that this is what the customers said they wanted, as it should be obvious by now that what a customer says they want and what they actually need are often not the same. This is also why mapping doesn't use an anchor of customer want but uses need instead. The second problem depends upon whether your competitor is using some form of ecosystem model. If they're using an ILC, Innovate Leverage Commodities, CXREF, hashtag Chapter 5 The Play and a Decision to Act Chapter 5 model, then their rate of apparent innovation, efficiency and customer focus will all increase with the size of their ecosystem. This means as much as we try to out-innovate, we can easily be overwhelmed by their ecosystem. For example, look at Amazon Web Services. When you consider AWS, don't think of it as going up against a company with a rapidly growing $12 billion in revenue and thousands of developers. Instead, you're taking on the entire AWS ecosystem. You should think of the ecosystem as Amazon's entire R&D effort and ask, do you really have what it takes? We need to cut costs to return profitability. Whilst cost-cutting can be useful to prolong the past and buy time, be careful to avoid the spiral of death caused by self-reinforcing inertia. The past is going, you need to accept this. If you've been caught in such a legacy position, then understand your role. Either you're heading for the cliff and aiming for a well-padded retirement, or using this in the hope of a lucky break, hence you're buying more time and encouraging experimentation. We need to price cut. Price cuts are a perfectly useful form of gameplay, but again, be careful. Unless you understand the competitor's value chain, then you're unlikely to know if they have constraints which limit their own price reductions. It's very easy to get into a game of last man standing with a competitor that has significantly more potential for price reductions than you do. We need to focus on core. In a time when those core parts of your value chain are evolving to a more industrialized form, then this can often become simply reinforcement of inertia combined with wishful thinking. Core is a transient concept, and as such, it changes. All of the above can equally be useful, if applied in the right context. But what has this got to do with the practice of scenario planning? This entire chapter has been all about introducing you to the concept of variants, of different possible scenarios, of different roles, of different contexts and the interplay between them. With this in mind, let us plunge into another scenario.